Behind the Bite podcast is part of a network of podcasts that are good for the world. Check out podcasts like the Full of Shit podcast, After the First Marriage podcast, and Eating Recovery Academy over at practiceofthepractice.com/network. Welcome to Behind the Bite podcast. This podcast is about the real life struggles women face with food, body image, and weight. We're here to help heal, inspire, and create better, healthier lives. Welcome.
Well, hello, and welcome to Behind the Bite podcast. Well, I see so many people who are struggling. They may not even know what their struggle is. They may tell themselves that they have just too much to do, or they are too busy, they have too much work, or they believe they just cannot truly be happy or live the life that they want until they look a certain way, or in their words, quote unquote, finally lose the weight. I see people suffering so much with not knowing what it is that they're thinking, feeling, or why it is that they are even engaging in the behaviors day in and day out that they are. But yet, they are so quick to berate themselves and negatively judge themselves whenever they are doing something like binging and wonder why it is that they did it in the first place or why they keep doing it again and again. I hear people say awful, horrible things to themselves like, I screwed up again, I'm a failure, and they swear they're never going to do it again. And I see people beat themselves up for being a failure because they dared to eat something they considered bad, or because they didn't have the willpower, were not strong enough to just stick to the diet today. People are just not connected to themselves. They have a lot of emotional pain or critical, negative, or painful thoughts that they just want to escape from or numb out from. It feels like what is real and what really matters is whether or not you ate the donut, right? It feels like the number on the scale is what really matters. I'm going to ask you, if you're somebody who's relating to anything I'm saying, are those the things that really, really matter? The things that really determine your value, your self-worth? Do they really define who you are as a person? You know what? I'm really excited to have a guest on the show today, someone who can really delve deeper into a discussion about eating disorders, body image issues, and the connection between the heart, mind, and body. Hema Vyas is a renowned speaker on heart wisdom, human consciousness, spirituality, health, energy medicine, and the science of Ayurveda. And for almost 30 years, she's been practicing as a psychologist and life leadership mentor. She leads international retreats, which are fully immersive workshops and events that align and restore heart, mind, and body. Her purpose is to raise awareness of the power of the heart and guide people through the experience of clearing any stuck or stagnant energy so the heart's innate intelligence flows. In the space of the heart that is clear of past conditioning, wrongly held beliefs, or untruths, we are naturally and effortlessly guided to the joy and love that is our birthright. That's what she believes. I'll say that again. She believes in the space of the heart that is clear of past conditioning, wrongly held beliefs, or untruths, we are naturally and effortlessly guided to the joy and love that is our birthright. Well, Hema, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me, Christina. Great to be here.
So I know you have a very interesting background, and so I'm wondering, would you mind sharing a little bit about how you actually got to this place in your life where you're at now?
Yeah, so not always an easy question to sort of condense the whole life, you know, but I'll give you the sort of brief outline. So, you know, I was born in Africa to Indian parents, and although I was born in Africa, spent very little time there. So I was a baby when I left, moved to India, and then ended up in England, and I lived in England. I've grown up in England. So I was a, you know, child when I came here, 4 or 5 years old. And so, you know, I've had an interesting journey in terms of, you know, marrying the spiritual background of my sort of my heritage, if you like, as well as the sort of academic background of my Western upbringing. And so, you know, I've studied psychology, but also marry it up with a lot of spirituality and philosophy and Ayurveda, which is the science of life according to the Indian principles, the Hindu principles. And, you know, those principles talk a lot about, you know, in terms of nature, food, and, you know, really what we ingest with all of our senses, not just with food, and how it creates, you know, who we are, not just physically, but how it creates who we are emotionally, mentally, and spiritually. So that's sort of the brief summary. But growing up, I definitely had my sort of challenges being, you know, coming from a very different cultural background. One of the big things was, you know, I was vegetarian. Now, it wasn't imposed on me. It was just something I grew up with. It was just an inner knowingness that, you know, I didn't eat meat. I wasn't brought up to eat meat. And then when I went to school, we're talking back in the 70s where, you know, literally school dinners were forced upon children and you had to eat what was given to you. And there would be the meat and two veg. And I remember having my mashed potatoes, and I would cover up the meat in order to, with the mashed potato, and then just take the top off and eat the top, as because, you know, they didn't understand that something about the food just didn't work for me. They didn't understand the culture. They didn't understand vegetarianism. And so it was really, really interesting. You know, I developed sort of what I would call an unhealthy attachment to sweet food, because all I looked forward to was a sweet then, because we'd have the dinner and then the pudding. And because I barely touched my dinner, because I had to use a lot of my potato to cover up the meat that I didn't eat, I then would sort of, you know, gravitate towards a sweet. But luckily, you know, I come from a background where at home we ate, you know, a whole array of different vegetarian kinds of food. And so I did find my balance quite quickly when I grew up, when I became a teenager, and then I was able to sort of control myself a lot better. But during those early years when I didn't have a say in play in how I ate, it was definitely a struggle. And that definitely helped shape who I am, my ability to speak out about things, my ability to say no, and to teach other people how to say no, not only to external influences, but also internal influences, because some of these things become deeply embedded in us. And so, you know, my journey has been about really empowering people to be true to themselves and to find who they really are, because I genuinely believe that our happiness lies with knowing who we are, coming from a centered place of what is genuinely right for us and what is not. And I think all problems arise out of imbalance, and it arises out of being told we have to be something or someone that we're not. And when there's an inner conflict, we deal with conflict by suppressing, you know, whatever it is we're feeling. We suppress it with numbing out, using our senses, and definitely food is one of them. But, you know, addiction to box sets and series and, you know, the wrong kind of music, being addicted to all sorts of things comes from that place. And so I've had to do my own work to really know who I am so that I can find my balance. And it's not always easy. It is a constant journey. But I think, you know, that's been definitely a big part of my learning and growing.
Wow. So you said so much in such a short little spot there. And, you know, I really want to get more into when you talk about suppressing things that are maybe painful or uncomfortable. And you know, you talked about that so well for yourself, but I work with so many people who also do that, right? And I'm sure people listening here are going, yeah, I get that part, like suppressing things that are painful and not wanting to really look at those things. And so I know you do a lot of work, obviously, with trying to work with balance. And so, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier about, you know, people listening really struggling with eating disorders and body image issues. And so what would you say to somebody who's listening right now and really struggling with, say, their body and not feeling comfortable in their body? What would you say is out of balance for somebody who's not wanting to be in their body or really even hating their body, saying, I want it to be so different. I'm not going to be happy unless my body looks a certain way, or I can't start living my life unless my body is, you know, X, Y, and Z. Like right now, it's just, I can't.
Absolutely. I think it's a journey and a process. I don't think there's any quick answer. If there was, they would have had it by now. But I think it's having the courage ultimately to really, really be willing to work on parts of yourself. You know, they're baby steps. We all have to take baby steps in order to grow and to change and to evolve. And if we're at a place where, you know, the listeners who may be really struggling with how they look and how they feel about how they look, one of the first things that I would say is you need to start thinking about where those messages come from. Because we, as human beings, are not created to hate. And that is something we learn. And if we are hating on how we look or how we feel about how we look or how we feel about, you know, different parts of us, whatever it might be, whether it's a physical thing or an emotional thing, at the end of the day, they are messages we have inherited from other people. One of the things that I say, sometimes we inherit things from our parents or their parents. So we carry a lot of ancestral energy. And sometimes what has happened is that you come to the end of the line. So the person who is really, really tortured by something like this, I'd say it's because they are the ones who actually have within their hearts the courage to overcome it. So if you imagine a whole ancestral sort of lineage of people gradually, you know, not liking some aspect of how they look for whatever reason, and it gets passed down as a deeply held belief that there's something fundamentally wrong with them, and eventually it gets to a point where there's such self-loathing, where there's such, like, they can't even go there, it's so deep, it's probably because they're the ones who have within them the ability to break through. Now, how you break through, there are lots and lots of different, you know, tools that are available. But I would say the first step is acknowledging that these are not necessarily all my thoughts. I may have adopted them. I may have taken them on board. I may have accepted them, but they're not all my thoughts. And so to disengage a little bit from those thoughts and begin to do energetic work, begin to clear energetically what doesn't belong to us. And, you know, the best ways, things like yoga. So, you know, I know meditation is something that a lot of people talk about now, and it may not be for everybody because it does require a level of discipline. But I think, you know, 3-minute yoga, 5-minute yoga, these are things that people can do. It just depends how committed they are to really wanting a change, even if they don't know what that change is or what it looks like or how they're going to get there. But that first baby step, because when we are doing certain asanas in yoga, we have these different postures, we have different mudras, we use our hands, we use our bodies, we use our energy, you know, and our breathing and our prana to really bring about a shift. And once you experience a little bit of shift in something, it creates a domino effect where lots of other things can begin to shift. So I would say if you're really unhappy, then take that first courageous step and do something different. Do something you might not have tried before, something you might not think would work. But sometimes it's those things that work the best.
So interesting. You know, you said such a short period of time to do yoga. And I know most people think of yoga, and I had somebody else on in an earlier podcast who talked about trauma-informed yoga, and it was very powerful to listen to. So no, you're talking about, you know, a few minutes of yoga just to make a shift. And can you talk about why that's so important to just try to do? What does it actually do for the body and for the mind?
Absolutely. So I would say the first thing is that the reason why I say such a short amount of space is because often one of the things that you know, people resist is when they feel like it's too much of a commitment, mm-hmm. and because they don't know the results, and we're sort of made in such a way that if we don't see the value or the benefit, we're inclined not to go there, especially if we don't understand it. And so that's why I say we start with something small. The first thing that it does is it connects you to your body, and you realize that your body is working incredibly hard to give you everything that you need. You have everything you need within you. You know, we have the wisdom, we have the understanding, we have all the tools we need to get through any kind of trauma, to get through any kind of pain. We have the resources within us. So if we can just step into our body, even for a minute, 2 minutes, 3 minutes a day, it creates a field, a vibration of love. And that is something that can then grow. So you imagine somebody who's not in a good space and doesn't really like who they are or how they feel or how they look. You start creating just a little bit of vibration within the body that connects them to the heart. The heart is going to give them signals that informs them that they are beautiful exactly as they are. And when we begin to feel that that is a possibility, we begin to emanate that energy out into the world, and we suddenly get validation from the outside world, mirroring back what we think and what we feel. The heart is very much a magnet. The heart is very much a mirror. And so it mirrors back what we put out there, and that's what we get back. But it also acts as a magnet. So when we start feeling good, we suddenly get attracted to things that make us feel even better. And so those 3 minutes are so powerful, because if we're breathing right and we're doing the right kind of action, the inner action that is required to bring about a small shift, it inspires us to create more shifts. The minute we see something is working, we are more inclined to work at it. You know, like with anything, if we do something and it works, we gravitate towards it again and again and again, which is why, you know, people do some of the things that they do. When they get a sudden high from eating something, next time they feel low, why do they gravitate towards it? Because it makes them feel good, and that's what they want. In the same way, doing yoga absolutely makes you feel good. And what we want to do is create an association with the body that is pleasurable, that creates pleasure, and that is doable. And so if you limit it to a shorter amount of time, everyone's got time to do that. You put the kettle on and you can do a 3-minute exercise, or 2 or 3 exercises for 1 minute. And some of the exercises that I, you know, sort of talked about and told, you know, they're pretty intense. So 1 minute can be quite intense. It's not like, you know, the stretching or something. It can be quite powerful. And I've definitely seen people shift as a result of doing it.
So I can just imagine somebody listening saying, okay, I don't know anything about yoga. That sounds maybe like something I could try, maybe a little scary, but what on earth would I even do? What would a 2 or 3 minute yoga exercise, or what would that even look like? How would I know what to do?
So I would say, you know, the kind of yoga I'm talking about is, you know, popularly known as Kundalini yoga. I call it Jnana yoga, which is basically yoga of knowledge. And it's really about, you know, tuning into that inner knowingness and that inner knowledge. And so if you are willing to try it, then I recommend that you go on to YouTube and just, you know, look up Kundalini yoga. I have a couple of exercises. They're very welcome to join my free community, and literally there are a few exercises on there that they could try just to feel a connection to their body. And if they're inspired, hopefully they will do a little bit more. But when we're really low, action is the best thing that we can do, taking physical action. And these exercises are that exactly the kind of action that sort of propels the energy to a to a space of higher thinking. So when we're low, not only do we feel low, but our thinking becomes contracted. And when our thinking is contracted, we can't get out of that space. It's so difficult to get out of that space. And that's what we want to encourage. We want to encourage people stepping out of a, you know, thought pattern, stepping out of a way of being and thinking that's all there is, because there is always another way. There is always a better way when what you're doing or what you're thinking or how you're reacting or responding to life doesn't work for you.
Now, have you had the experience where someone might try that and actually feel worse or have awareness of thoughts that are really painful or really difficult to experience?
Not necessarily with the exercises, because it takes up most of your energy. So, you know, the Kundalini yoga is normally sort of done alongside music. So you're playing, you know, quite uplifting, quite energizing music, and you're concentrating on your breath, and you're doing a little bit of the exercise or doing, you know, the mudra, which is just hand postures. So it takes up quite a lot of space. So you don't necessarily have time to think, which is really positive, you know, and that's really what we're trying to achieve, to stop them from thinking the repetitive thoughts that are dragging them down, dragging down their thoughts or their feelings or dragging down, you know, their actions or choices. And so that's, you know, one of the really powerful things about it. But as you do that more and more, of course, at some point, things will come up. I've definitely had a lot of people, you know, just literally spontaneously burst into tears, and they don't often know why. And, you know, Christine, I would say it's so powerful. For me, I feel like I'm really doing a good job when I make people cry, not because I'm, you know, wanting to see them upset, but it's so cathartic. It releases so much. You know, when you cry, you're letting go of stuff that you've probably been holding on to that have been suppressing your emotions and suppressing, you know, those old feelings that are probably, you know, really need to be cleared out. Anything we hold on to becomes toxic. And so, you know, if they end up crying as a result of doing something like this, I'm delighted. And they are too. They feel lighter. They feel better as a result of it. And the beauty of it is, and this is why I really love it for something like, you know, people who are struggling with eating disorders or, you know, really not in a great space, is that it takes away the need for analysis. Being psychologists, you know, we know that that's something that, of course, can help and support people on their journey. But sometimes when you're in a space, that's not what you need. You don't need to analyze it. Sometimes you can't analyze it because, you know, anything that is really deep, it's often begins at an unconscious level. And so how do you analyze something you're not consciously aware of? And I would say these exercises definitely help with that, because that's where the most help is needed, to not have to analyze, but yet to bring about an energetic shift, which allows for an emotional shift, which then allows for a physical shift.
Yes, and we are energetic beings, just as you're talking about, and emotions, right? They can be very uncomfortable, like you said, right? And so to have that shift, I think a lot of times people have so much negative energy inside of them, so much self-hatred. And you were just talking about how the heart is love. And I don't know if people are sometimes afraid to connect with that or don't experience that enough. And so how can people connect more with that? Is there other ways other than through yoga? How do you help people connect through to their heart more, or to have more self-love, or even have more positive energy flowing through them?
Yes, there's so many other ways. And, you know, definitely meditation is one of them. And I want to explain a little bit about sort of meditation in the sense that, you know, for me, it's really about connecting the left brain, right brain. You know, when we use a combination of imagination and what we already know, and you bring it together, And so, you know, meditation doesn't have to be silent. It can definitely be very, very powerfully vivid and using your imagination. It can be a very active experience. It's not just about, you know, silencing the thoughts and going into yourself and being, you know, quiet. It can actually be something you do. So, you know, really focusing on how you want to feel and using your imagination to create that sensation of feeling what you're feeling, which will absolutely drop you into your heart. When we use our imagination, it connects us with our heart. When we slow down the left brain, the conscious brain, the logical brain, and we tap into the imaginative part of our brain, the more feminine side of our brain, we step into our hearts. And when we step into our hearts, we can experience a huge number of different emotions that are much more uplifting, much more positive. So that's one of the things that we can do. We can, in the way that we use our imagination for negativity, so we use our imagination to say, I can't have that, I can't do that, I'm not good enough for that, I'm not quite how I should be, I'm not, don't look how I should, I'm not the size I should be, I'm not the colour of hair or whatever it might be. You know, all the things that people go through. When you start using your imagination to say, what if being like this was really what the world needed, and it's what brought me the happiness, what got me the job, what got me, you know, that beautiful, loving relationship, whatever it is that we think, how we feel and look and is holding us back from, what if we use that? So, you know, it's learning these tools and being really committed to going through the process, because it doesn't happen overnight. But I definitely think that, you know, can definitely learn to use our minds in our favor as opposed to against us. And any negative thought pattern that we're holding on to is us using our own thoughts against ourselves. So turning it on its head and using it positively. But I would also say, for example, for those people who are really struggling with something they feel they have no control over, it's really about expanding our awareness. So, yes, that's one thing you don't have control over. So, for example, I'm not very tall and I'm not likely to be tall in this lifetime. So that's a given. That's okay. That's how it is. Yes, I can wear high heels or whatever. But, you know, if I accept that, okay, that's the thing that, you know that I can't change. That's one aspect of me I can't control. That's one thing that I can't change. When we really are willing to go, okay, how can I expand? Well, what does being tall get me? Well, is it because I want to be able to reach things? Is it because I want people to see me? Is it because, what is the reason? What is the reason behind it? And when I'm able to really tap into it, there's always a solution. And that's what I mean by expanding our awareness and our consciousness. Because when I really start to think, well, if it's just about, you know, getting that attention and, you know, feeling like I'm good enough to be in the world because I matter, because I am a certain height or whatever it might be, then when I really, really connect with my heart and feel that sense, that vibration going out into the world, then I can guarantee you it doesn't matter about how physically high or tall I am. What matters is that I will have an aura about me and an energy that just attracts people to, you know, whatever it is that I really want. And it's really expanding our awareness to recognize that we are perfect as we are. And how do we tune into and ask the right questions to understand what the real problem is? Because whatever we think our problem is, if we can't change it, chances are it's not our problem. And so it's about the quality of question, being able to ask the right question. Well, then what is the actual problem? Then we're able to get to the actual answer. And if it's because I live in a world with lots of very tall people, and I think, well, then that's lovely, because if I wanted to stand out, well, I do, because if lots of people are really tall around me, then I stand out because I'm not that tall. And that's great. So how am I going to use that to my advantage? And that's what it's really about. It's asking the right question, because unhappiness doesn't come from those external things. Unhappiness comes from our story around it, our narrative about it. Mm-hmm. And we can change that. We can change our narrative and we can change our story.
I love that so much, because I do find that people do get stuck in that faulty belief system, that faulty narrative of, I just, as you said, I can't be happy unless something about me externally changes. Something about me externally is different. And so often I hear this almost every single time that somebody is seeking a shift in their body and in how they look externally. And if they ever do get there where they wanted to be, they are shocked. They say, "Doc, I am not happy. How come my life didn't shift? How come everything I imagined that was going to happen didn't happen? It's not enough. I'm still not happy." And then they say, "Well, maybe if I do more, maybe if I change a little bit more, then I'll be happy." And it's never enough, because you're right, it's not about that at all. And they were chasing some carrot that they're never going to catch, right? Just to your point, it's really about, well, what if you get there? What are you really wanting? And just exactly, you want to feel good enough. They want to feel happy. They want people to notice them, right?
Absolutely. Because, you know, as human beings, that's what we thrive off. We thrive off connection. And so it's not so much about, you know, the ego just wanting to be noticed. I think it's, you know, we're looking for a connection. And often, you know, I'd say any source of unhappiness is really a disconnect from ourselves, from who we really are. And, you know, covered up with lots and lots of conditioning from the world we live in, mm-hmm. the society, the culture, you know, the people around us, and this idea that this is what perfection looks like, or this is what happiness looks like, or this is what success looks like. But it's not true, because we're all individual, and it's individual for all of us. And so if we can find that connection to ourselves again, I think we can find what real happiness looks like. And I think we have to do a deep dive, because the answers aren't outside of us. The answers are within us, because the narrative doesn't change just because we physically change something. You know, if really the unhappiness is coming from somewhere deep inside, if it's something, you know, we'll find another reason. So, you know, we might get the hair color we want and suddenly think, well, that should, you know, do the trick. I always want to be a redhead. So there you go. I'm happy now. Well, I'm not, because the narrative hasn't changed, you know, because it's still there. We're still carrying the not enough. And so really the real question is, what is not enough? And I would say it's love. And what's missing is a feeling of love, because somewhere something has happened that has led most people to feel like somehow you have to do something, or that there has to be something more in order to have love, to be loved, or to, you know, experience love in any way. And it's just simply not true. We are love. Our essence is love. And the way to really know that as a knowingness, not just I can say it to somebody and they can go, okay, I hear you, but doesn't mean I believe it. How do we change that belief system? Mm-hmm. And I'll say that we change it by really, really allowing our hearts to really engage with the knowingness, because our hearts know. Our hearts are always guiding us towards knowing that we are loved, that we are beautiful exactly as we are, and that we are enough. But we can't experience that until we raise our consciousness enough, our energy enough, to be able to connect to that heart space. And we connect to that heart space by having the courage to let go of everything that is covering the heart space, where the truth exists, where the truth of who we really are, and the nature of us being pure love. So we don't need to seek it.
I know that's the majority of the work you do. Right. And I'm just remembering so many people that I work with saying, oh, gosh, Doc, I'm awful at meditating. I can't do it. I can't. I don't know how to do it. I'm just not going to do it. And I don't know if you ever hear that from people, but for anyone listening saying, yeah, no, I'm not good at it, what would you say to them?
I'd say that, you know, it's because you've misunderstood meditation. You know, meditation can be doing the dishes. Meditation can be walking nature. Meditation can be, you know, stroking your cat. Because what is meditation? Meditation is switching off a lot of the constant chatter and just coming back to feeling. When we switch off the constant, you know, the negativity that we connect with, the negativity we think or the negativity we feel comes from a constant dialogue with ourselves that we're not enough, that we're not lovable, that there's something wrong with us. And if we can just switch that off, we don't have to be silent. We just have to connect with feelings. Feelings that empower and enrich our lives as opposed to the thoughts that create the feelings that make us feel bad. So we're living life topsy-turvy. We are so attached to our thoughts and so attached to the external world. And that takes over. And so I would say, you know, if you think you can't meditate, how much do you want to feel good about yourself? If you really, really want to feel good about yourself and who you are in this world and want to connect with that inner feeling of love and that inner feeling of beauty, and that inner feeling of joy, then take time to see, you know, what you're doing can be meditative. So let's say if you're, you know, cleaning the windows, see it as an opportunity to just listen for your thoughts and try not to actively have any thoughts, but just listen and just tune into a feeling and choose a feeling or a vibration and let that be your meditation, going out for a walk in nature. You know, we can all do that. We can all go to a park or somewhere in nature, a garden, somewhere where you can, you know, just recognize what's hurting you are your own thoughts and be willing to just say, I'm just going to listen to what those thoughts are, and I'm going to listen and ask myself the question, where do they come from? Because they're not mine.
Yeah.
So that's one way of dealing with meditation. The other is music. You know, music can be meditation. Listen to some beautiful music. Obviously, be mindful of not listening to lyrics that might trigger you in a negative way. So usually, you know, more instrumental music is probably better, or uplifting music. That's meditation too. That can be very meditative if it's switching off your constant thought and giving you an opportunity to just tune into another vibration, then that's going to be really, really helpful. Dancing is again meditation, and I know lots of people can enjoy dancing even if they don't necessarily enjoy meditating. So, you know, find what you love. Anything you love is meditation. If you love something, put your attention on that. If you are grateful for something, put your attention on that and keep bringing that up in your consciousness, because the more you connect to what you love, the more you are going to vibrate at a level of love that goes out into the world. And it really, really works. It really works. This is not just, you know, theory. This is something that has been around for centuries, and it's always worked. Tuning into nature, because we've disconnected from so many things that bring us back to ourselves, we've got to make more of an effort to come go back to those things that help connect us. You know, when we're young, we can just sing and dance and all the things that we do as children. We grow up and we stop doing it so much. Mm-hmm. Certainly as adults we stop, and that creates a much bigger disconnect. And so come back to what you know, whatever it might be.
So well said. Yeah, watch children. They're so in tune with themselves, and they just Yeah, you're right. Watch them. They're so fun to watch. They're just dancing around and they're just, you know, doing what they want. And they're so, they're happy, right?
Exactly. And they're oblivious. You know, what does this look like? Or am I wearing the right color top? Or, you know, they don't care. They don't care about. And when you really, really look at a happy child, you really do see what matters and what doesn't, because they don't care about anything, you know, as long as their needs are being taken care of by either someone there to love and protect them. And I guess, you know, not everyone has that, so right. Especially when they grow up. But, you know, we can learn from children. We can learn to be childlike, you know, not being childish, but being childlike in our abandon and our ability to find and look for and search out what really fills our heart with joy and keep on connecting with that rather than the narrative that is hurting us for whatever reason.
Right. And I've often said to people I work with, would you say all the things you say to yourself in your head to a 5-year-old? How do you think they would react or how would they feel? Because that's what you're doing to yourself. And so how could you possibly feel positive or good about yourself when you're saying all these nasty, horrible things all day long to yourself? It's awful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so, you know, maybe one of the other tools is to really write to that young part of you and, you know, invite her to really step up if you want him to step up, if you know you have memories of being that, you know, toddler who had such abandon. And if you don't, then maybe create one, you know, an avatar of that part of yourself and really connect with the possibilities, because we are energetic beings, Christine, as you said, and you know we can shift our reality. We just have to be willing to do it and to believe that we can do it.
Absolutely. Well, Hema, it has been amazing to have you on the show. So much wonderful information. How can people find you? How can they find out all this great information you've shared and maybe even look up the videos about yoga and connect with you?
That would be lovely. So I have a website, himavias.com, and if they just connect via that, then they can just, you know, send me an email and I can direct them to my YouTube channel, Himavias, where they can see some of the exercises. But I also have a community which is free to join. It's called Heart Renaissance. Mm-hmm. And there's lots of talks and meditations and, you know, guided ones, so they don't have to sit in silence, and lots of different sort of resources for them to tap into. So if they would like to go via my website, they can find the community Heart Renaissance and be a part of that, which I would love.
Fantastic. And if anyone didn't get that down, do not worry. I will have that all in the show notes. So there will be links to all of that as well. So thank you so much. I really enjoyed speaking with you.
Thank you, Christina. I did too.
All right. Thank you again.
This podcast is designed to provide accurate and authoritative information in regards to the subject matter covered. It is given with the understanding that neither the host, the publisher, or the guests are rendering legal, accounting, clinical, or any other professional information. If you want a professional, you should find